Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay. Discussing the first verse of the prayers by the personified Vedas, in which they show how they describe the absolute truth literally with their own words. The phrase, or the second line, which says, Jayajam dosha gribita gunan, is being discussed. Please uproot this material energy of illusion. Even she has her aspect of knowledge, two aspects, ignorance and knowledge. But that so-called knowledge is also material, that also should be uprooted. Okay, now we continue in paragraph 17. Ato maya ghatana yogya shakti tvena taratita tvam vyapadishya sat chid ananda ganatvam bhagavato vyanjayanto tan nirasana mukena tatpartya vidya shrutayas charantiti vyanjitam. Okay. Let me read the translation first, then we'll go back and analyze the words. By indicating that the personality of Godhead is beyond Maya, by his possessing the potency to eradicate her, it is implied that he is the full embodiment of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. This implication further suggests that by denying everything else, the Shrutis refer to him as their purport. Okay, so we have reference here to the second and third modes of the expression of meaning by words, as we study in poetics. Words can describe things directly through their literal meaning. They can describe things more figuratively. And thirdly, they can suggest another level of meaning. The word Ganga is the name of a river. If we say a village on the Ganga, that doesn't make sense literally. Buildings don't float on top of the water. They would sink. So the village on the Ganga is understood to mean the village that is actually on the shore that is next to the Ganga. That is a figurative usage, where the meaning is actually something connected with the literal meaning, but not exactly the literal meaning. Thirdly, the fact that that village is situated on the bank of the Ganga suggests that it's a sacred place and that the atmosphere is cool by connection with the river. That is the vyanjana or suggestion. So literally here, maya gatana yogya shakti tvena. Since jai, defeat this maya. So by saying, you please defeat this Maya, that it indicates that he has the power to do so. He possesses potencies which can overcome the material influence. That means that he's more powerful than the material energy. He's transcendental to the material energy. So, that makes a third suggestion. If he's stronger than Maya, he must be have spiritual energies that are more powerful than material energies. He must be Sachidananda. So this is how the Vedas describe the absolute truth figuratively. Not, they also describe him directly, but often they describe him figuratively, by implication. Just by saying, please conquer Maya, that implies a lot about the Supreme Lord. So figuratively, it describes his transcendental position. Okay. Examples of such shrutis that describe the absolute truth in a secondary, figurative way. Shrutayascha mayam tu prakritim vidyan mayinam tu maheshwaram iti ajam ekam iti. Anybody know what the rest of that phrase is? That verse that begins ajam ekam? Anyway, we'll see it in the commentary. Next one. Sarvasyaripatik sarvasyeshana and sava esha neti neti ityadyaha. These are such shrutis as, first one, no material nature to be the energy of illusion and the Supreme Lord to be the possessor of that illusory energy. Then the verse referring to one unborn female, and another one referring to the Lord and Master of all. Because these are just snippets, we have to look at the whole verse to see what they talk about, and that will be examined in the commentary. The next one. Indeed, this is he, not this, not this. So these are examples of statements of Shruti that figuratively describe the personality of Godhead. They say something which implies something else about him. Okay. Now, a question is raised. This is raised by the Lord who is being prayed to. Gaurabhadakshaya Vishnu has a question. Nanu maya nasham sampratya mama tad upadikam aishvaryadikam api nashayatum ichchati yatra samadatte. Twamiti, the Lord asks, but when you pray for the destruction of Maya, you are also wanting to destroy my opulences and other qualities, which are imaginary features produced from her. This doubt the Shrutis reconcile by the words beginning Twam. What are those words? Oh, I'd have to go back to the top here. Twamasi yadatmana samavaruda samasta bhagaha. By your spiritual energy, you have incorporated within yourself all your opulences. Yad, yasmad, tvam, atmana, surupe naiva, samavaruda samasta bhagaha, prapta, padama, tripad, vibhut, yakya, sarvaishvar, yada, si. Because by your own self, atmana, which means by your very essence, your surupa, in your original identity, by yourself, in your original form, you have captured all assets. Because samavarud means to capture. That means you have obtained all opulences that are known as the threefold expansion, the tripad vibhuti of the spiritual world. Because of that, tasmad. Yasmad. Actually, that should be tasmad. Tasmad, tava, taya, tuchaya, tadupadikair, aishwaryadibir, va, kimityardaha. Therefore, since you've captured all these, by your very self, captured all spiritual opulences, therefore the idea is, of what use for you is that insignificant maya and the opulences artificially produced by her? So anyway, they're answering they're answering that, no, Lord, your personal opulences are not material. They come from your spiritual self. Tatacha yat sayad ajaya twajam itratra padyetika. Therefore, it is stated on the commentary to the verse, beginning, because of the illusory material energy, the living being assumes a material form. That's from where? I don't have the footnotes turned on. Hold on a second. 16. It's from the Bhagavad. It's also coming up. It's verse 38. In the prayers of personified Vedas. Anyway, on that, to that verse, Sridhar Swami has given his commentary. Nahi nirantarakhladi samvit kamadenu vindapater ajayakritiyamiti. The Lord of countless spiritual desire cows who afford perpetual bliss has no business to accomplish with the material energy. Tata na yeshamiva desha kaladi parichinnam davashta gunitam aishvaryam. Thus your eightfold opulence is not limited by time and space like the assets of other persons. Apitu paripurna swarupa anubanditvat aparimitam ityartaha ityesha. Rather, your eightfold opulence is unlimited since it belongs to your perfectly complete personality. That's Sridhar Swami's commentary coming from verse 38 of the prayers of the personified Vedas. Okay, now my commentary. The Supreme Lord is Sat Chit Ananda, fully satisfied in his own eternally perfect knowledge and bliss. Yet he is not happy with just enjoying himself, ignoring the suffering of the jivas who have rebelled against him. He is always concerned with their unfortunate condition and does everything he can to help them. He employs his energies, which can destroy the jiva's illusion, the power of his all-attractive personality. and his instructions, and those of his deputed servants, recorded in the Vedas and other scriptures. This work of dispelling illusion is done on one soul at a time, because total obliteration of Maya at once would force liberation on those who do not yet want it. The Lord's intention is that each jiva, sooner or later, chooses of his own volition to come back to him. When the Vedas are not directly referring to the Lord, they imply his glories by suggestive hints. This is the mode of word usage called tatparya, purport. A teacher may be angry at a student late for class, but holds back his fury and simply says, "Do you know it's 12:30? On the surface, this is only a request for a confirmation from the student that he knows what time it is. But the words have an unspoken purport. Technically speaking, tatparya is the speaker's intended meaning, understood from context, from tone of voice, or from other indications. So the tatparya is what the Vedas are expressing, their tatparya here. The Shrutis cited here point to the glories of the Supreme Lord by stating that he is discovered by giving up illusion. Material knowledge fails to reach him. But when that inferior vidya is negated by recognition of his superiority, he is then pleased to reveal himself. The first statement from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad contrasts Maya with the Lord who possesses her. Making a small correction here. The word Upanishad was plural. I have to make it singular. Oh, come on. Okay. It doesn't help. Okay, now... Then the second statement, the second verse of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad contrasts the jiva. I'm sorry, there are two different statements from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad that are quoted here. So the second one that's quoted contrasts the jiva who tries to enjoy Maya with, again, the Supreme Lord, who is indifferent to material enjoyment. So first of all, mayam tu prakritim vidyan, mayinam tu maheshwaram. That's one statement from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. It actually comes later, it's 4:10. Know that the Supreme Lord, that Maya is the material nature, and the Supreme Lord is the controller of Maya. Then a little earlier, 4:5, is this other statement, ajam ekam. That is this verse. Ajam ekam lohita shukla krishnam bhakvi praja srijamanam sarupa ajohyeko drishamano nushete jahatyenam bhukta bhogam ajonyaha. There is one eternal female who gives birth to many children, red, white, and black, all resembling herself. One eternal male lies beside her, trying to enjoy her, while another eternal male leaves her aside as already enjoyed. This is... from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it uses the word aja, which means eternal, but it also means a female goat. So you get this metaphor of these goats. One is a female goat, has two boyfriends. One is trying to enjoy her, the other one is giving her up. this material nature, and the living entity, and the Supreme Lord. The words sarvasyadipatik sarveshanaha, that's another statement. Where is that from? Brihadaranyaka Upanishad? Yes, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 5, 6, 1. Those words suggest that the Supreme Lord has an existence of his own, transcendental to material existence, by describing his total dominance over that existence. Sarvasya Adipati, he's the master. Sarvasya Shanaha, he's the controller of all this in this world. That means he's coming from somewhere else. He's controlling this world, he must come from some other world. Now the whole statement there, 5.6.1 of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is as follows. Sava ayam atma sarvasya vashi sarvasyesh adipati sarvasyeshanaha sarvam idam pashasti yadidam kincha sanasaduna karmana bhuyan natra vasaduna kaniyan esha bhutadipatir eka lokeshwara esha lokapala sase tur vidarana esham lokanam asambhedaya. Indeed, this self is the controller of everything, the Lord of everything, the master of everything. He rules all that exists in this world. The Lord of everything, the master of everything. Sarvasya Shadipati, Sarvasya Shanaha. He does not become greater by good works or less by bad works. He is the Lord of the material elements, the Lord of all realms, the protector of all realms. Sorry, I got to delete an extra word here. Krishna is not cooperating. Anyway, he is the rampart, the foundation that keeps all these realms from collapsing. What's a rampart? It's not exactly a wall. Well, it's a sort of mound of earth, like a dike that keeps water from entering a field, or on a battlefield. You make a barrier, you know, like a just big pile of earth that keeps the enemy from coming in and keeps the bullets from hitting you. That's called a rampart. Yes. Well, fort has ramparts. It's part of the protection feature of a fort. But also it's the word setu in Sanskrit. In a rice paddy field, there are dikes. You know, little walls of earth surrounding the field. That's also setu or rampart. Yes, Bruno.
That one? On the dam, there are two sloping surfaces.
Yeah, those are piles of earth. Yes. Yes. Okay, continuing. Then there is a reference to the verse neti neti. That's also from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Not this, not that. This is favorite to the impersonalists. It occurs within the statement, sa esha neti yet neti neti atma griyo nahi grihyate. He, the self, is not this, not that. Indeed, the imperceptible cannot be perceived. Well, how do we take that? We don't take it exactly on face value. The imperceptible can be perceived, but it can't be perceived by material means. But that's the original statement. Actually, the neti neti comes up a few times in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad in different contexts. In other words, unfit eyes cannot see the Supreme, but they can become fit by removing the defects of vision one by one. Sri Jiva explains the second line of the prayer as a reply to a hypothetical objection by the Lord who is being aroused from his slumber. The line that says that you have assumed your spiritual energies, your opulences by your spiritual energy. He's saying, well, you want me to dispel Maya, but won't that dispel all my personal qualities too? And they're answering, no, your personal qualities come from your inner nature. So by proposing, aren't the opulent features of my personality also illusory? The Lord is testing whether the Shrutis are impersonalists. So he's checking the Shrutis out. You want to wake me up? Are you personalists or impersonalists? They pass the test by answering, no, all of the variety seen in your abode emanates directly from your perfect original self. Whatever is in you and connected with you in your service cannot be touched by the inferior potency of Maya. If you ask an impersonalist, what about the personal qualities of Narayan? Aren't they also illusion? If that impersonalist was going to be honest, he would have to say, yes, I'm sorry, they're also illusion. When the impersonalists say, no, Narayan is, you know, Narayan is perfect, then they're not being honest. They're pretending to be personalists, but they don't actually believe it. Their actual belief is that all qualities are illusory, all personal qualities. Thank you. Then there's the reference to something that's said later on in the prayers of the personified Vedas, Sayada Jaya. Where does Jyotiswami come up with that? Sayada Ajaya Twajam. And Sri Goswami gives his commentary on that verse. That's verse number 38. But in the sequence of the prayers, that statement comes, the text beginning Sayada Jaya comes 24 verses after the first verse spoken by the Shrutis. So way into the prayers comes this verse. Sayada Jaya Twajam Anushayita gunam chajushan bhajati swarupatam tadanumrityum apeta bhagaha twamuta jahasitam ahiriva twacham atabago mahasi mahiyase shtagunite parimeya bhagaha. So there's reference to Aja. That's actually an allusion to that same verse of the Shweta Shweta Upanishad. So here the personified Vedas are commenting on themselves in this verse. The illusory material nature attracts the minute living entity to try to embrace her. And as a result, he assumes forms composed of her qualities. Subsequently, he loses all his spiritual qualities and he must undergo repeated deaths. You, however, avoid the material energy in the same way that a snake abandons its old skin. Glorious in your possession of 8 mystic perfections, you enjoy unlimited opulences. Okay, that's what the personified Vedas are going to say. Any comments?
Uh,
Hare Krishna.
I go ahead with that.
Yes.
You're asking Maya is separate?
Well, Maya is considered the separated energy of the Lord. That she is standing at a distance. She's ashamed to look in his face. And the whole material creation that she produces is kept separate. It doesn't participate in the Lord's pleasure pastimes. In that way, separate. But actually, she's still his expansion. She's still connected from him, connected with him. But she tries to keep her distance. It's only a metaphor that the Lord keeps away from Maya the way a snake gives up its old skin. Because it's not that the Lord was covered with Maya and he shook her off. He never was covered with Maya. So it's an incomplete metaphor. It's not meant to be taken exactly. But that kind of separation. Once a snake shakes off its old skin, it has nothing to do with it anymore. The snake doesn't care what happens to that skin. It has no use for it. Like that, the Supreme Lord has no use for the material energy. Okay. Yes.
Okay, so we have this example from Shudashodara Upanishad, I think, about female god. And we have two eternal jivas, which jiva is enjoying, is trying to enjoy, and then another one has left.
I think the other one's supposed to be the Paramatma.
Yeah. So, and in the translation, they said that he left her aside as being
already enjoyed.
Already enjoyed. So does that mean
that? Well, it was because that he's been enjoyed by the jiva. She's been enjoyed, and jiva's been enjoying her.
But it doesn't mean that that Paramatma also at some point of time was enjoying this material energy.
No. It means that that first goat was enjoying her. Okay, let's move into the next paragraph. We could just have enough time if we go ahead to cover one more paragraph. So, atra atma shabdena surupa matra vachakena tata bhaga shabdena surupa bhuta guna vachakene dam dvanyate. Here, an unspoken implication is made. It's made by the word atma. I think atmana, he's samavarta, samasta bhagaha atmana. So that word atma, that's implying something. The word atma indicates his basic self. And the word bhaga indicates the qualities of that inner self. So that makes an implication. Swarup adi shabda ishwar adi shabdas cha swarupa matra valambanaya swarupa bhuta gunavalambanaya pi rudya nirdeshtam shaknuvantiti. So the implication by the words atma and bhaga are that other words like swarupa and ishvara, they are capable of describing him by their conventional meanings, which are based on the facts of his self and the quality of his self. So the Lord has a real swarupa. He has real qualities. And the words Surupa and Ishvara are descriptive of his identity and of his qualities. Those words convey those realities, describe those realities directly, literally. And there are Shrutis who speak like this.
who by ordinary conventional direct meaning of the words are describing the identity and the qualities of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such shrutis as Shrutayascha Yadatmako Bhagavan Tadatmika Vyakti. What the personality of Godhead consists of, that his visible appearance consists of. Now that's Shvetashvata Upanishad. He uses the word Bhagavan. And another statement. Shvatparasya Shaktir Vividaya Shruyate. I'm sorry, that Yadatmako Bhagavan is not Shvetashvata Upanishad. We don't have a reference for it yet. But that Parasya Shaktir Vividaya Shruyate, that's from the end of the Shvetashvata Upanishad. Ityadikas and other such statements. So the statements are, what the personality of Godhead consists of, that his visible appearance consists of. In other words, what you see is what you get. What he seems to be is what he is. And the other statement, we hear from the Vedas that this Supreme has various energies. Okay, let me read the commentary on this. In the first prayer, the word Atma, remember the first prayer, Yadatmana Samavaruda Samasta Bhagaha. By your internal nature, you have assumed, you have captured all your personal opulences. So the word Atma, own nature, and the word Bhaga, or opulence, of the phrase Atmana Samavaruddha Samasta Bhagaha, by your very nature perfectly full in all opulences, suggest something about how it is the Vedas can describe the Supreme. As these two words affirm, the Supreme is a person with many wonderful qualities. Material duality must be absent from him. But if he is actually the Supreme, who can stop him from exhibiting spiritual variety, even though he is one and unchanging? He has his variety, called Vishesha by some, to distinguish it from material duality. And suitable words can describe that variety. The word dvanyate, used here, literally means is echoed. In the context of poetry, this echoing is the same as vyanjana, suggestion, the third mode of word usage. The first mode is abhida, or literal reference. Words obtain their literal meanings by either grammatical derivation, yoga, or by convention, rudi, or a combination of both. Conventional meaning has precedence over derived meaning. The word svarupa is derived from the adjective swa, own, and the noun rupa, form. Its yoga meaning would thus be one's own form. But by convention, svarupa has a more specific meaning. It means essential identity. Ishvara similarly means capable of controlling. From its derivation from the root ish, to control, and the suffix vara, which expresses the idea of having a natural tendency. Thus, by the derived meaning, anyone with any control is an Ishvara. But by rudi, by convention, the word refers to the supreme controller. The second mode of word usage is lakshana, figurative indirection, by which Krishna can call Arjuna a lion among men, although Arjuna is not actually a lion. The third mode is vyanjana, or dvani, by which words which have already passed through the first and maybe second mode suggest further meaning. Arjuna's being called lion among men suggests his heroic prowess. Similarly, by using the words Atma and Bhaga in glorifying Lord Narayan, the Shruti suggest, without saying it explicitly, that the Vedas can indeed describe him in words. Okay, any comments on that? Vinny?
About this yoga and rudi, like yes. In Harinam Vyakaran we have also paribhasha that yogat rudi baliyasi.
Yes.
So, like just a comment.
Yogat rudi baliyasi. The conventional meaning has precedence over the derived meaning.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
That is one of the paribhashas, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I'm taking it from that, yes. Then
what is the reason why Shruti have to describe Lord indirectly? Why they can't directly? What's the reason?
But we're being told now that they do both ways. That they sometimes, kwachin charanto, sometimes they directly describe him.
Yeah,
and a lot of times they indirectly describe him.
Is there any reason?
Yes, there are a few reasons. First of all, there are not many people are ready to understand direct description of the Lord. When you describe the Lord directly, you lose a lot of your audience. A lot of people can't understand. Then you have a very restricted audience. The more specific you get about the Lord, the less people can understand. Another thing is that there are many things about the Lord that are too subtle and too complicated to describe directly in words. You cannot describe the actual experience of rasa in literal words. For a poet to describe or to evoke rasa, he has to resort to the most subtle means of suggestion. You cannot, just by saying Mahabhava, it doesn't express Mahabhava. It doesn't give you an experience of what it is. You have to use poetic devices, suggestions. So there are more subtle things that cannot be described by literal meaning. So therefore, the Shrutis, for various reasons, don't sometimes use direct direct meaning, literal meaning to describe the Lord, but a lot of times they use less direct means.
Thanks.
Okay. At the start of the
is it what you mean? What you mean by saying that Vedas, that we can describe Krishna by suitable words, because we know that the material world they cannot explain him. But what does it mean, suitable words?
Well, it's not like we have two separate languages that we use. We use Sanskrit for spiritual description, then we use French or German for material. No, we use the same Sanskrit for both material and spiritual descriptions. So the languages aren't different, but the consciousness of the speaker and the consciousness of the listener is different. According to the consciousness, the use of a language varies. So a person who knows what he's talking about and knows how to use words can choose suitable words. When a person doesn't really know what he's talking about, he's just throwing words around, but not even a clear idea of what he's trying to say, then he can't choose suitable words. Another person may know what he's trying to say, but he doesn't know the language he's trying to say it in. So he can't choose suitable words. So you gotta know the subject matter, you gotta know how to use the language, then you can choose suitable words. When the subject matter is transcendental, then you have to have that transcendental awareness of him in order to be able to pick the right words. But it's not that you have to create some, mystic language. You can use the regular, at least the Sanskrit language, and people like Prabhupada can use mundane languages like English to describe the absolute truth. They can find suitable words because, first of all, they know the absolute truth. They know what they're talking about. And second of all, they know how to use the language they're trying to express themselves in.
Then question arises, but for example, if you have written words describing absolute truth, which have written words.
Rudi?
written words. Somebody wrote down all the description. He might be aware of this subject matter. He might have used the proper words. But then, what happens when somebody who is not fit, he reads this description? Can he also get an understanding, or he has to become fit for this?
You mean, okay, the words have been written down by someone, by an expert, okay? The words have been written down by somebody who knew how to choose the right words. Then you have somebody who's going to repeat those words?
Question is it possible for anybody to perceive these words without hearing it from the person who...
Yeah, I don't ascribe to that theory that you have to hear it face to face, right out of his mouth. I don't see the difference, and I don't think Prabhupada did either. The recorded sound in the form of printed book, in the form of recording, is non-different. It's the same language. The written language, the spoken language, and the spoken language recorded on a mechanical device, it's the same language. It's the same words being expressed by the same conscious living being. So there's no real difference. Why do you have to hear it face to face? You know, how many of us, I mean, I didn't get my initiation, my mantra from Prabhupada directly. And some may say I'm not properly initiated. But I don't agree with that. You know, I got my initiation, my mantra in a letter, and some sannyasi, I think Kirtananda Maharaj, you know, repeated the mantra. But as far as we're concerned, the recorded sound is not really different from the original sound.
Does that mean that Krishna agrees to manifest himself in the written word or in the spoken word, and in this way influence the consciousness of the receiver?
Well, that's what, you see, the Vedas ended
is it,
up...
Is it so? Or because in one place it was said that we shouldn't write down Vedas because it will spoil everything, like there is one...
The Vedas are only written down in Kali Yuga. They're not supposed to be written down otherwise. It's just a concession for Kali Yuga. But they don't lose, although it's considered offensive normally to study the Vedas from printed material, but allowance is made in Kali Yuga. And it's still the Vedas. Prabhupada's instructions are the same instructions whether you heard them from Prabhupada face to face, whether you heard them on a tape recording, or read them out of a book. It's the same instructions. It has the same effect. And you may receive it indirectly. Somebody may give a class on Prabhupada's translation and purport. Then it's being subjected to an interpretation because it's being filtered through the intelligence and the words of the person who's giving the class. But if that person is properly faithful to Prabhupada, then still the effect is good. It may even be improved.
So basically it depends only on the consciousness of the perceiver, one who is perceiving these words or
the person who's speaking and the person who's hearing. Mm. And if there's a third person in between repeating it and interpreting it, then what he contributes also matters. The process of communication can be improved by the quality of the speaker, the hearer, or the interpreter in between, or it can be degraded.
So,
when Shukadeva Goswami repeated the Bhagavatam, he improved it. He didn't just pass it on unchanged, he made it better.
So does it mean that when it is said that if one reads even one word from the Srila Prabhupada's books or one sentence or one page, anyway, if he reads just very little bit, he can get full realization? Does it mean that Krishna, he can manifest for this particular person and give him this realization?
Yes.
If he wants to?
But that's an indication of the special potency of Prabhupada's words. I mean, the Prabhupada's words are a special instrument in Krishna's hands. Like a Brahmastra weapon. It's not, you know, you have a, you want to demolish a building. If you have a nuclear weapon, it's no problem to demolish the building. Easily done. So Prabhupada's words can easily change a person's life because they're extremely powerful. In Krishna, in the hands of the super soul, they can change people's lives easily. Okay, we're over time, so we'll stop here. Thank you. I have to go to Delhi tomorrow, so I'll be back for Sunday. I'll be back Saturday night. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you.